Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. So a few weeks ago, we were talking about the cute, helpful robots at the Olympics. And then this past week, there were reports of unprompted laughter coming from Amazon's Alexa and totally creeping out some owners. I think it's fair to say that our relationship with artificial intelligence at this point is mixed. A lot of attention has been focused on issues of privacy and economics. What happens if AI makes human workers obsolete? Now, a new report from the nonprofit Environmental Law Institute encourages engineers, lawmakers, and for that matter, each and every one of us, to consider the environmental ramifications of artificial intelligence. Joining me now is Dave Rajeski. He is the director of the Technology, Innovation, and Environment Program at the Environmental Law Institute and lead author of that new report. Dave, welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Thank you. Glad to be on.
All right. I have to ask, just because I've been asking everybody, do you own an Alexa and has it ever laughed at you?
No, I don't, but I own a Volkswagen TDI 2008, which is kind of what got me into thinking about this. This was one of the cars that had the emission problems, and it was obviously the result of somebody programming a piece of software. So actually, that was kind of my entry point into thinking a little bit about what happens when software takes over control of the things around us.
So as a refresher, right, this was diesel Volkswagen vehicles that had certain emissions controls that in fact the car computer was turning off those emissions controls except when the car was in an emissions testing situation, and then it would nicely turn them on, essentially cheating the system. Is this artificial intelligence or is this just human programmers programming a computer to do that?
Well, I think it's the beginning of software taking over decision-making that has obviously some impacts on the environment. And it was a large impact. I mean, it went undetected for 7 years. I think the other interesting thing, which is part of this whole AI thing, is we tend to think of it as embedded in a thing. But a lot of it is embedded in, people call the Internet of Things. The Volkswagen example was a great one of machines talking to machines. So the humans were kind of taken out of the picture, and you described it really well. The car pulled up. The emission testing said, oh, this is a car, and I want to basically change the performance of the car, and it drove away and it changed things back. So it was a combination of both a computer program in this world that everybody's moving into now where we're surrounded by intelligence in things around us rather than necessarily a computer or a robot.
You point out in the report, though, that there are different levels, different degrees of artificial intelligence. And I mean, I think we all have examples of this in our daily life, right? We have various things that say they are smart devices. Not all of them would actually necessarily qualify as artificial intelligence. So where's the line there? And what are these different types of artificial intelligence that we're dealing with?
Well, I think it's a very fuzzy one. So the beginning is what some people call just, you know, smart programming. I think, you know, basically we can create programs that, and the early chess playing programs were like this. They could just very rapidly go through every possible permutation, every possible move. They didn't do a lot of reasoning or abstracting. And I think, you know, what you've seen now is machines that are just getting very, very good at actually learning from the environment around them so they can actually process information. They know the temperature of the house, it's daylight, night. It almost can pick up, in some cases, as you said, your mood, basically based on environmental impact, the tone of your voice. So the machines actually reach a point where they can begin to learn. And people call this sort of a transition to deep learning. And that was one of the things that we sort of raised in this paper is what happens when essentially the machines decouple from the humans and we give them a basic training set and they start to move on to make their own decision-making processes. So in the Volkswagen example, what would happen if the machine actually became capable of making ethical decisions and caught the car, right? So I think, you know, this is the path that we're on. And I think the one thing that's interesting is just it's a position that we can have a lot of influence on now as we start to go down this path and the machines begin to do a lot of learning without human impact. Who makes the decision? And the other thing that's interesting to think about is whether the machines can actually explain to us what they're doing. And I think that's something that a lot of the people that work on AI now are very worried about. There's a whole movement in kind of explanatory artificial intelligence where people are starting to sort of ask the question, well, the machine made an incredibly interesting decision here. Can it explain to me what it did?
Hmm. Dave Vrjeski is the Director of Technology, Innovation, and the Environment Project at the Environmental Law Institute. We're talking about the environmental ramifications of artificial intelligence. We started with a cautionary tale of the Volkswagen vehicles that were evading emissions testing, essentially. But you also have some positive examples, and a lot of this comes down to energy efficiency in buildings is one key example. But again, there's this difference between just having, like what I have in my house, the old-fashioned at this point, programmable thermostat where I program it to turn on at a certain time and turn off at another time, versus maybe something like a Nest that can learn and adapt, can figure out if somebody's home and therefore turn on lights or turn on heat. And you highlighted one example of Google that had a group working with deep machine learning to try to reduce energy use at one of their big data centers. How well did that work? And how different is the outcome when you have actual artificial intelligence working on this issue of energy efficiency than, you know, a human being just saying, turn my heat on and off at better times?
Well, the interesting thing about the data centers is they tend to use a lot of energy. They're also very interesting targets for this kind of application because they're critical infrastructure. We really count on these things. So whether it's a large Google data center, Facebook, or Microsoft, or a lot of them don't even have humans in them anymore, a lot of the ones that are run by telecommunication companies for phones. One of the things that, again, makes it very interesting is that they essentially put a lot of monitors. So it's not just the sensor in your house where you might have a Nest sensor in your living room. So there's a sensor or a set of sensors on every single server or very close to all the servers. So they actually can take thousands or tens of thousands of data readings every few seconds. So they're able actually to control the temperature very, very precisely. And they also map that intelligently into the performance of the system. So you get this feedback loop between what the temperature is and how well the actual servers are performing. And they've been able to reduce, it depends on the system. Google's actually done a lot of investments in moving to renewables, but they've gone down 15 or 20%. It's not unusual for some people that do this kind of work with data centers to be able to drop the energy down to 40 or 50%. One primary target might be in the future the people that do Bitcoin mining for cryptocurrencies. These are obviously systems that are using significant amounts of energy. So I think the ability to use this kind of combination of intelligence with lots of data is going to have a fairly large impact on buildings. And you'll start with very intense, sort of energy-intensive buildings that we count on, like data centers. And then that you'll see that technology then moving into probably more commercial buildings.
One of the places where you highlight the need for this conversation and the fact that the timing is really right for this conversation is with autonomous or self-driving cars, that this technology is coming, definitely. And there have been a lot of conversations about security and privacy and various other issues. And there are some people who are talking about self-driving cars in the environment, but I mean, you point to this as a case where if we make the right choices, it could be incredibly beneficial to the environment. And if we make a different set of choices, self-driving cars could actually be incredibly detrimental. So what are some of those decision points? What will push it one way or the other?
I think some of it will be public policies, because I think there's a lot of, we talked to a lot of city managers, and there's a lot of them that are quite worried about the use of autonomous vehicles in the cities, that it's actually going to increase the number of vehicle miles traveled and the carbon footprint of the automobile system. So you may actually benefit from making sure that some of the autonomous vehicles driving around are low-emission vehicles or electrical vehicles. You may provide subsidies to get people to ride together. One can imagine going in another direction. If it becomes very easy to use, economists will tell you we'll tend to overuse it. So there'll be more people driving. There'll be more people getting in their car from further distances out because they're not really worried about having to drive. They can sit there and, you know, basically enjoy television shows on the way to work. So I think there's an awful lot of both psychological and economic pressure that pushes us to actually overuse autonomous driving, and that may actually make emissions patterns worse. So I think the time is also it's probably ripe to think about this. It's also important to think about how autonomous vehicles would interact with the rest of the mobility system. Rather than just thinking about cars, we really need to think about this whole concept of shared mobility. So could you use autonomous vehicles to more efficiently take you to public transportation systems? And could we subsidize that or incentivize that? And how do we use the entire system, not just the autonomous part, to reduce emissions? Eventually, once you get up to the point where you can control the whole system, it might be possible actually to move the cars around in such a way that we reduce emissions in particular areas because of weather inversions or something like that, or the fact that there's traffic jams and we actually have control of the whole system and we can actually move these vehicles in such a way as we reduce pollution. But I think that's going to be a long way off before we reach the point where we can optimize the system for environmental and energy benefits. And the initial use may actually push up the emissions portfolio of the cars on the road if we're not thinking carefully about how we incentivize people to use these as part of how they get from point A to B. And the other thing that I worry about, obviously, is that the AI systems are being pushed very, very rapidly by large corporations. So there's kind of a Darwinian war going on, and who's going to get out there first with autonomous vehicles. So it may be that the things that we put on the road first are not necessarily the ones that are most beneficial. So I think that it's just a question of how do we kind of intervene in the system early to have the kind of conversations we need to have to make sure that people start thinking about this, both from the standpoint of how do we plan our cities. There's a lot of talk about, well, if we have artificial autonomous vehicles, we can just get rid of parking garages. Well, yeah, that may be possible, but then what do you do with the land use issues if we can do that? And how long will it take to get to that point? So I think it's a large conversation. There's going to be lots of people who have to take part in it. But it really needs to start now, and I think that was one of the reasons we tried to kickstart it, because I can imagine the technology moving much faster than the policy decisions.
Dave Franceschi is Director of Technology, Innovation, and the Environment Project at the Environmental Law Institute and lead author of a new report exploring the positive and negative potential effects of artificial intelligence on the environment. Dave, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Until next week, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.